When you arrived at the scene, what did you see?
Two women deceased. Gunshot wound to each of them. Cold-blooded murder.
There was a U-shape of red candles on saucers. In the middle of it, it says, "Satan loves you."
What do you think the killer was conveying?
That this is a satanic murder.
It was terrible. All of us were close to my mom.
Mom's dead. I was totally shocked. What happened?
I was just bawling and bawling. Made no sense whatsoever.
Who is the intended victim? Was it Betty? Was it Rita Roundy?
He was scary and threatening. She had mentioned, if anything happens to me, have him investigated.
He made a statement that he was going to go kill her.
Was there ever a time where he got close to confessing to you?
I was pleading to him and I was crying. Just tell him you did it.
Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, and tonight we're on the case in Idaho Falls, Idaho. The city, known for its breathtaking natural vistas, became the unlikely setting for a terrifying double homicide. The cold-blooded murders would shatter two families and force police to piece together a puzzling set of clues where nothing was what it appeared to be. July 24th, 1989. It was just after 7:30 on a Monday morning when a frantic call came in to the Bonneville County Sheriff's Office. The man on the line claimed that he had just discovered a double homicide inside his friend Rita Roundy's home.
Was it clear to the caller that both victims were dead?
Yes. He said that they had both been shot.
Did the caller seem to be shocked by what he described?
Yes. He was just a mess. We actually had to settle him down.
The caller, Leroy Levitt, met police outside. He identified the victims as 49-year-old Rita Roundy and her close friend, Betty Gray. Levitt said he had stumbled upon the tragedy after coming to Rita's house to give her a lift to the airport.
When he rang the doorbell, nobody would answer the door.
Levitt told police he walked around the house and noticed that the sliding glass back door was open.
He started yelling for Rita Roundy and Betty Gray to come answer the door, and they wouldn't.
Then Levitt went inside and made a shocking discovery.
What a horrible scene to walk into.
Especially if they're your friends.
When Detective Victor Rodriguez entered the crime scene, he immediately noticed a critical detail Leroy Levitt hadn't mentioned. 18 recently burned out red candles that had been meticulously placed on the stove.
Describe to me what the pattern of the candles looked like.
There was a U-shape of red candles on saucers. Six candles, six candles, six candles.
Detective Rodriguez just happened to be an expert on satanic murders, so the symbolism of 666 stood out to him, as did the ominous writing in what appeared to be blood.
In the middle of it, it says, "Satan loves you."
What do you think the killer was conveying?
That this is a satanic murder. I expected to go in the bedrooms and see blood all over the place. I expected to see brutalizing of the victims sexually.
But the rest of the crime scene was the opposite of what Rodriguez expected. Inside the master bedroom, he discovered Rita Roundy, who appeared to be peacefully sitting in her bed.
Her head was just down, with one shot to her head. Went in and out. She had a book in her hand. If you didn't notice the bullet hole, you would think she was asleep. No signs of violence.
Did it appear to you that she was ambushed?
Yes.
Were there any signs she had been sexually assaulted?
No.
The scene in the guest bedroom where Betty Gray was found was eerily similar. What position was Betty's body in?
Betty was laying on her stomach face down. Looked like she was asleep. Single shot right behind her right ear.
Was there anything that suggested that she tried to fight for her life?
She didn't have any bruises. She didn't have any contusions. There's no signs of force.
In fact, other than the two victims and the candles in the kitchen, the home was incredibly clean. And there was no indication that anything had been stolen.
Things hadn't been gone through. Things hadn't been rummaged through. Nothing was out of place.
Except for the bathroom, where there were traces of blood in the sink, and the toilet seat had been left up.
I'm thinking, well, this is kind of weird. Why would two women have a commode up? Okay, so their suspect just turned into a man.
A man who had been in no rush to flee the crime scene.
You could see where the killer had walked in and sat at a Lazy Boy chair.
He also left a Mountain Dew can plus cigarettes that had been smoked, four or five of them.
What does that say about how sadistic he was?
Very cold, very callous, calculated.
Detectives sent the soda can to the crime lab for analysis.
Could you lift fingerprints from the can?
There was none because we thought he was wearing gloves.
The killer had left almost no usable evidence behind. Police discovered just one bullet embedded in the wall of Rita's room and no shell casings.
What did it belong to?
It looked like a 9mm.
The killer's attention to detail seemed at odds with what Detective Rodriguez knew about satanic rituals.
Ritualistic killings don't clean up after themselves. They leave messy, bloody walls. So we have something else here.
You thought someone staged the scene?
Yes.
To throw you off?
Right, right. He took his time and knew what he was doing.
But if the double homicide was a carefully planned execution, who was the intended target? Was it Rita, Betty, or both? Detectives knew they needed to ask a lot of questions before they could even begin to look for a suspect.
What was going on with Rita and her personal life? What was going on with Betty's world and her personal life? Why did this homicide happen?
Nine-year-old Rita Roundy and 47-year-old Betty Gray had been found shot to death inside Rita's Idaho Falls home. While police were analyzing the disturbing evidence at the crime scene, they still hadn't had a chance to inform the families about the tragic double homicide. Rita Roundy was a divorced mother of three who worked as a sales manager for a sporting goods company. Her adult children were scattered across the country when police had to deliver the heartbreaking news about their mother. Paul Roundy was just 25 years old at the time.
I was working in Denver, and the police actually came to my work. And they gave me a teletype saying that my mother had been involved in a homicide. I asked them if that was a joke. I didn't believe it.
That's a brutal way to find out that your mother was killed.
Yeah, it was just a numbing. Just a shock.
When 27-year-old Clayton Roundy found out about his mother, he drove 45 miles to tell his younger sister, Ruth Ann, face to face.
How hard was it to break the news to your sister?
How do you, tell that to your siblings, It was terrible. All of us were close to my mom.
He said, "Mom's dead." And I was totally shocked because I thought, what happened? Did she get in a car wreck? And he said that she had been shot to death.
Friends
For Betty Gray's children, finding out about the vicious double homicide was just as painful. Her daughter Sarah was pregnant with her second child when police arrived at her home.
You and your mom were really close. Just how devastating was the news?
I couldn't share my impending pregnancy with her, so I told her while she was in a body bag. I was just bawling and bawling. It didn't make sense. It made no sense whatsoever.
Who did you think could have been involved?
My mind was completely blank. Everybody loved my mom. My mom would give you the shirt off her back, give you the last $5 out of her pocket, and smile as you walked away.
Betty's husband, Bill Gray, also appeared to be crushed by the loss of his wife.
He was very somber. My dad told me that he believed that it was an occult or a terrorist act. He was just paranoid about everything.
Betty had dedicated her life to raising her kids and running the family's pawn shop. In her free time, she baked cakes for special occasions.
Betty was an extremely well-liked person. She was known around the community as the cake lady. She made beautiful cakes. She was extremely nice.
It was the Gray family business that had brought the two women together. The Gray's pawn shop was a longtime client of the sporting goods company where Rita worked.
What did your mom tell you about her friendship with Betty?
Betty was her good friend, and I know that they hung out quite a bit.
Now, both families were trying to help police identify a suspect. It was a surreal experience for Rita's youngest, Ruth Ann.
It's a shock because she's such a loving, wonderful woman that you'd go, who would want to do that?
Police believe that establishing a motive for the crime would be the first step in solving it.
Who is the intended victim? Was it Betty? Was it Rita Roundy?
And why had the killer gone to such great lengths to make the murders look like a satanic ritual?
We all thought it was bizarre. It's not something that we found in any other crime scenes. I had never heard of something like this.
If there's a satanic murder, there's more signs. We didn't find anything to do with satanic ritualistic behavior.
Still, forensic experts concluded that the words, Satan loves you, had been written in Betty Gray's blood.
We saw the blood drops from her body all the way to the kitchen.
The elaborate staging of the crime scene actually helped police to create a solid estimate of when the murders happened.
We actually timed those candles to how long we would burn. They burned for 3-4 hours.
When officers arrived between 7 and 8 a.m., the candles had burned out, but the wax was still warm.
Based on the evidence, what time do you think Betty and Rita were murdered?
Around 2 or 3 in the morning.
As investigators continued to process the crime scene, they discovered another odd clue outside in the driveway.
They found the bicycle tire track.
Did Rita own a bicycle?
No. Neither one, Rita or Betty, had a bike.
Could the carefully planned murder of two loving mothers have been committed by a killer riding a bike to Rita's rural home? It was just another piece of evidence that pointed to a suspect who knew the area well. And one person who fit that description
was the man who discovered the crime, Leroy Levitt.
A lot of times suspects return. That's what we were thinking. That's a ruse to go to the house and report what you just did.
So at that point, you were thinking that Leroy Levitt could have killed
both
women?
By all means.
And police hoped that a pointed interview would be the first step in proving it.
Idaho Falls Police, investigating the murders of Rita Roundy and Betty Gray, had an important unanswered question about the evidence at the crime scene. Why had the kitchen been elaborately staged to appear to be part of a satanic ritual when all of the other clues pointed to it being a cold-blooded double homicide? Detectives believe the key to solving the case would be establishing a motive to determine whether Rita, Betty, or both women had been the target of the attack.
From the very beginning, detectives had been suspicious of Leroy Levitt, the man who first reported the double homicide. Levitt said he had visited with Rita and Betty the night before the crime and had left them around 7:30. Then, less than 12 hours later, he returned to find them dead.
How would you describe Levitt's demeanor while you questioned him?
He was very, very nervous.
Did you tell him you suspected that he had murdered Betty and Rita?
Yes, there's no playing around here.
Detectives were convinced that Levitt was hiding something, and they were right.
Leroy Levitt didn't tell us the truth.
When you say he didn't tell you the truth, what did he lie about?
Betty. He said that he only knew her as a friend, and actually, he was having an affair with Betty.
In fact, the affair had begun more than a year and a half earlier. And there was evidence that the couple had plans for a future together.
He didn't tell us that he had been sending her cards. He didn't tell us about the safety deposit box that he got for Betty to store money.
Detectives wondered why Levitt hadn't been honest with them from the start.
Why is he hiding all this? Why wouldn't he just be right up front?
How damning did you think that lie was?
It's very damning.
Did that lie put Leroy Levitt front and center in your investigation?
Yes, immediately. You bet it did.
Police believe that the murders could have been a desperate attempt to cover up the affair.
Maybe he killed Betty and Rita to keep a secret. His wife never knew that he was having an affair. He never really intended on leaving his wife. Maybe Betty had told him, I'm going to tell your wife and force the issue.
Investigators asked Levitt to take a lie detector test. He agreed.
One of our detectives gave him a polygraph and he had a little difficulty in it.
The results indicated that Levitt was being deceptive on critical questions. But Levitt insisted that his wife could verify that he had been at home with her on the night of the murder.
Did his wife actually corroborate what he said?
Yes, she corroborated that he went home.
What did his wife reveal when you talked with her?
Shock. She didn't know about the affair. It was a surprise to her. I really felt sad for her.
Investigators ultimately confirmed Levitt's story, and he was officially eliminated as a suspect. Police determined that fear over his affair being uncovered and the trauma of finding two friends dead caused the inconclusive polygraph results.
He had difficulty because of all his emotions and especially his wife and family. That's why he lied.
With Levitt crossed off their list, police continue to examine the personal lives of the two victims, hoping to find someone with a motive to commit the terrible crime. And Rita's daughter, Ruth Ann, quickly pointed investigators at their next suspect.
Did she ever tell you about any situation that made her feel vulnerable?
She had an acquaintance, J.W. Dyer, that she was afraid of. And she had mentioned, if anything happens to me, have him investigated.
Did she ever explain why?
He was scary and threatening.
And Rita's other children confirmed that fear.
All of us kids knew that. She told all of us.
Why was she so afraid of him?
It intimidated her.
As police set out to find J.W. Dyer, they wondered if Rita Roundy had somehow predicted her own tragic death. The Bonneville County Sheriff's Office still believed that Rita Roundy and Betty Gray had been killed by someone they knew. What wasn't clear was who had actually been the target. And their theory that it had been a personal attack gained traction as investigators talked with Rita's family about a dangerous man in her life. Rita's children told police that J.W. Dyer had begun his campaign of terror against their mother several years earlier when she had lived in New Mexico. They said that Dyer had access to guns and had stalked Rita even after she moved to Idaho.
He was still kind of keeping tabs on her because he knew of her whereabouts.
He was a guy that scared her on many occasions. As she changed her phone number, he still got the new number.
But even more troubling had been Dyer's reaction to Rita's rejection of his romantic overtures.
She didn't want to see him. He got angry. He made a statement that he was going to go kill her.
Who did he make that statement to?
He made it to Rita in front of somebody else that witnessed it.
Now police wondered if he had followed through on his threat.
Well, that was a real red flag. We need to find this guy.
Detectives tracked down Dyer in a small town in Oregon. Dyer admitted he had threatened Rita's life, but he claimed it was nothing more than angry words.
Where did Dyer say he was on the night of the murder?
He said he was home in another state, hadn't been in Idaho Falls.
Investigators were skeptical and asked Dyer if he would take a lie detector test.
Once we found J.W. Dyer, he was very cooperative.
The results of the polygraph backed up Dyer's story.
He just said too much at the wrong time. And here you have Rita Roundy dead. It wasn't him.
Detectives officially eliminated Dyer after Oregon police confirmed his alibi. Once officers determined the man from Rita's past wasn't her killer, they then turned their attention to her most recent boyfriend, a co-worker named Hugh Riley.
Did you know anything about him?
My mom was seeing him. He was a sales rep, and he lived in Washington. She was in love with him.
Throughout their relationship, Riley had told Rita that he was divorced. But just before she was killed, she discovered the shocking truth.
In fact, the day before she was murdered, I talked to her on the phone, and she just got off the phone with his wife.
Rita told her daughter that Riley's wife had no idea about the affair until that conversation.
She told you that she had confronted the wife?
Yeah. Yeah, because she was really upset about it. He told her that he had divorced his wife.
Rita's children now wondered if that emotional phone call might have been the trigger for the double homicide.
They thought, did he get really upset that my mom informed his wife? Or did the wife get really upset because she found out that he was seeing another woman?
Investigators wanted to talk with Houston Riley. They saw the tangled relationship as a critical new lead.
Love and fidelity is just a bag of what ifs. So he became suspect number three.
And Riley's wife quickly became number four.
Did you have any reason to suspect her?
Well, sure. She's going to lose her husband. You bet.
But Riley and his wife had ironclad alibis for the morning of the murders. Both had been in Washington State at a family birthday party.
Did officers believe her?
Yes, 1,000 miles away. That just eliminates him. Now, does that eliminate his wife? Sure, she's in the same boat.
As the investigation into the double homicide dragged on, it cast a shadow of fear over the quiet community of Idaho Falls. Residents worried about a killer on the loose. Author Dixie Murphy saw the impact of the case firsthand.
This is a sleepy little farming community, and there's very little crime. So it was very, very traumatic when this crime happened. Things changed around here.
It was scary because we had no idea of who it was, and I thought, is it somebody after our family? Am I potentially a next target?
Then, just as the investigation appeared to be grinding to a halt, the police got a strange call from a hospital security guard who had seen reports about the case and now wondered if a strange encounter he had that night might be connected.
What did he say?
He called and said, as I was walking my grounds in the parking lot in the dark at 3 a.m. on July the 24th, I saw this man putting his bicycle into a green travelall.
As the guard made his way over to the truck, the driver saw him.
This man had hurried up and put this bike into the travelall, shut the door, walked quickly into the driver's side, and hid after he got in.
The guard approached the travelall and asked the driver if he was all right.
And this man was just sweating profusely.
After a short conversation, the man sped off into the night. The guard thought it was just an odd encounter until he heard about the double homicide that night. Detectives were intrigued. Rita's house was just 3 miles away from the hospital, and investigators had found bicycle tracks at the crime scene. They asked the security guard for a detailed description of the man.
50s, grayish black hair, and had a backpack. He described the bicycle as being a girl's bicycle and had a wool seat on it.
Police asked the guard to work with a composite artist to create a sketch of the driver. And the final result sent the case in a whole new direction. Detectives in Idaho Falls had an important new lead in the mysterious murders of Rita Roundy and Betty Gray. A security guard at a hospital 3 miles from Rita's home had seen a man loading a bicycle into his green travel-all truck around 3 a.m. on the morning of the double homicide. And the composite sketch the guard helped create convinced police the man he had seen was responsible for the heartbreaking tragedy. When the police artist finished his sketch of the man the security guard described, authorities were stunned. The drawing was a perfect likeness of Betty Gray's husband of 29 years, William Bill Gray. And there was more.
The man the guard had seen was wearing a medical alert bracelet like Williams, and the green travel-all truck had Wyoming license plates. Still, Detective Rodriguez was skeptical. At the time of the murders, Betty Gray's 49-year-old husband was out of shape and recovering from health issues that required a kidney transplant.
I'm going, no way he would be able to be riding a bicycle. 6 miles? Could he do that?
Police asked the guard to view a photo lineup, hoping to remove any doubt.
He picked out William Gray as the person that he saw in that travel.
Right away?
Right away. He just identified William Gray as the man in the van. Oh, what a moment.
A case that had been in danger of going cold suddenly had a prime suspect. Detectives immediately began their investigation of William Gray by contacting police in his hometown.
I called the Jackson Hole Police Department and I said, run over to William Gray's pawn shop, see if there's a green travel-all there.
Detective Chris Bracken drove out to the pawn shop and was amazed by what he discovered.
I found a green travel-all. I had found a vehicle that they had just described. I had photographed the travel-all as it sat because they knew Bonneville County would need this information.
When police developed the pictures Detective Bracken had taken, they discovered another critical clue. There was a bicycle leaning against the wall. It appeared to be the same bike the security guard described.
There was the bike. A girl's bike with a wool seat. The officer didn't know anything about it. He accidentally took a picture of the bicycle.
Investigators were now certain they were on the right track.
He just made us the case.
The photographs of the bicycle and unique truck confirmed everything the security guard had seen on the morning of the double homicide. And the evidence against Bill Gray continued to mount.
He smokes menthol cigarettes, the same that we found in Rita's house.
Did you confront Bill Gray with the evidence you had against him?
Oh, definitely. William Gray was very defiant, very angry. His alibi was that he was home. He denied everything.
Gray told detectives that he wasn't aware of Betty's affair with Leroy Levitt, but investigators believe he was lying. They saw the couple's failing marriage as a financial motive for the murder.
If Betty would have left him, she would have gotten 50% of the assets. He was extremely greedy, and he wanted it all.
You don't take from Bill. It was his. It was the money. That's all it was. The money.
And police quickly realized that Bill wasn't just planning on protecting his assets. They discovered evidence that he had actually planned to profit from the crime.
He had a life insurance policy on her that Betty Gray didn't know about.
What did he stand to gain financially by killing her?
$250,000.
Although police had uncovered an amazing amount of circumstantial evidence, the case against Bill Gray still had one major weakness.
As far as direct evidence, blood, fingerprints, no, nothing.
Detectives searched Gray's house and the pawn shop looking for the gun that killed Rita and Betty. But none of the pistols he owned was a match.
We don't have the murder weapon.
And it became a crushing blow for the families of both victims
when the district attorney decided that the case wasn't strong enough to get a conviction.
I was just thinking, this guy's out running around. He's got away with this. I was very outraged.
We're not supposed to get personal, but those kids have no answers, and they have no closure.
Even Bill Gray's own children had become convinced that he was a cold-blooded killer.
When Detective Rodriguez walked you through all the evidence he had against your father,
that's when I believed. I knew he was responsible.
And it was Sarah, her brother, and an aunt who refused to allow Bill to walk away from his crimes. 1 year after the murder of Betty Gray, they filed a wrongful death lawsuit in civil court and won. And their victory pressured a newly elected DA to take another look at the evidence against Bill Gray.
The prosecutor felt that he then needed to go forward and file the criminal charges.
On April 9th, 1992, police tracked down 52-year-old Bill Gray in New Mexico and charged him with the murders of his wife, Betty, and her close friend, Rita Roundy.
Did he seem surprised?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he was very surprised. He didn't think we'd ever get him.
Prosecutors knew they'd have to use the powerful circumstantial evidence to convince the jury of Gray's guilt.
Based on everything you knew, how do you think the murder unfolded?
William Gray knew that Betty was going to be in Idaho Falls. When he got there around 1 in the morning, he took the bicycle out of the travel lot, parked at the hospital, and rode it 3 miles to Rita's house. When he walked inside the house, he went directly to Rita and shot her. Confronted Betty and shot her.
Bill Gray then staged the crime scene to look like a satanic ritual in an attempt to throw investigators off his trail.
He brought the candles. He brought the place that he put the candles on and lit them. While they were lit, he decided to sit down in a recliner, smoke a few cigarettes, drank a Mountain Dew.
How long do you think he was in the house?
A couple hours.
Gray's careful plan had gone awry when the hospital security guard spotted him in the parking lot with the bicycle. The trial's most dramatic moment came when Gray's daughter, Sarah, took the witness stand.
Describe to me what it was like to testify against your father.
I was pleading to him and I was crying. I said, just stop it. Just tell him you did it.
As she left the stand in tears, Sarah delivered a final, emotionally conflicted message to her father.
It says, I still love you, but I will never forgive you. But I really, really want a hug. And they wouldn't let me approach him. They escorted me out.
It was very heartbreaking. There's hardly a dry eye in the courtroom.
Bill Gray ended up taking the stand in his own defense.
His defense was basically, I love my wife and I wouldn't do that. Everybody that was in that courtroom that had testified, according to Bill, had lied, except him.
But jurors didn't believe him. They found William Gray guilty of 2 counts of first-degree murder.
Describe to me the moment the verdict came down.
I was very emotional. I was just crying because we were finally there. This was the moment of truth.
The 53-year-old got two life sentences for his crimes. Did you think the sentence was too long?
Oh, no. No, I want him to live the rest of his days as a reminder of why he is where he is.
William Gray's children have done their best to move on, but his actions also shattered the lives of Rita Roundy's family.
What did Bill Gray take away from you and your family?
My kids will never meet their grandmother, you know, and she was such a cool lady. She was great with kids.
What do you tell your kids about your mom?
Oh, how fantastic she is. She would love these kids. I think she probably handpicked them. She's just loved through and through and missed.
After serving 17 years behind bars, 70-year-old Bill Gray died in prison on November 16th, 2010. I'm Paula Zahn. Please join us again next time when we're back on The Case.